You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio. On this show, well, first I'm going to, as usual, recommend that you go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on the donate button and send some shekels to keep this show alive. And then also, I am going to recommend that you go to nationalbugle.com and download the CoCertified app. You'll find the link to it a little bit down the page, CoCertified. It's a lot of fun, and it's a great education. Today, I'm continuing the interview with Patrick Little. If you didn't hear that yesterday, you can hopefully it'll be on my YouTube channel by now. You can go back and listen to that. But I've got part two of that interview coming right up. So here we are talking about, Jewish revolutionary power. I don't know what Archibald Ramsey thinks. I think he's come across a formula, and I think that formula is valid. But I don't know if, you know, any Jew is consciously aware of this formula, or I shouldn't say any.
If this is what they do unconsciously, doesn't that make it even worse than this was a conscious planned hierarchy that could be interrupted?
Yeah. It makes it different, and maybe it does make it worse. I don't think there's a plan that's being followed. I think this is the result of their group behavior that doesn't require a plan, doesn't require that much plan.
At the massive level of coordination, you can go back to the Prince of the Jews proclamations that he sent out via courier to the Jews of Iberia, or the Jews of France, or the Jews of England, where he instructed them to infiltrate the culture. And
there's a certain amount of planning. There's a certain amount of coordination, but there's also an awful lot of just impromptu natural cooperation.
But also the instinct to subvert is strong, because if this is not planned, given that they've done this over and over and over again, I would say the revolutionary spirit is the thing that is not planned. But I think the destruction of the country financially, the enslavement of the country, the disruption of its trade if it's not cooperating with Jewish power structures, I think that is quite well planned.
The reason I emphasize this is because, partly because I mean, that's what I actually think. I do think that. I think that there's a certain amount that's planned, but an awful lot that's not. And I say it because I think if people go and look for the plan and can't find it, it doesn't mean that this type of thing isn't going to happen. You know what I mean? I think the predictions that are made based on this formula are probably pretty valid, even if there's no formula written down. Just as the predictions made by the protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion have been played out, even if that book was not written by a scribe at such a meeting. You see what I'm getting at? And because the Learned Elders of Zion might not have been written by Jews, it might have been written by Czars of the Agent, doesn't mean that the predictions made by it aren't valid predictions.
Well, as I've heard Dr. Duke say in the past, it was most likely written by Russian aristocrats that understood the revolutionary spirit of the Jews after their emancipation, when they were seizing control of the educational institutions in Russia. Starting in the 1870s, Russians said this emancipation thing was a bad idea because the Jews are becoming way overrepresented in the schools because they're trying to avoid military service. The law of 1874 exempted people pursuing higher education from certain types of military service. And what they did was they then went into academia, and they used academia as places from which to coordinate subversion, where they propagandized people against the existing hierarchy, and where they started this ultra-egalitarian, anti-moralist, anti-Christian, anti-traditional revolutionary spirit, and it's laid out very well in Stoltz and Eachin's 200 Years Together. I believe chapter 5 and 6 go into this quite well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, my recording is, my program is filled up. I don't know how much longer you want to live stream or if you want to take questions from people.
Yeah, let's, so I will be taking questions here. I'll read them aloud. So, audience, if you have questions, go ahead and post them in the chat. So, we're waiting for those. So,
I heard you have a cat.
Yeah, I do have a cat. And
it's a good thing my dog wasn't in the room because we would have gotten into an awful lot of sound, a lot of extraneous sound there.
Oh, yeah. Well, the cat likes to complain. So Zuhar X6 asked me, do I hate Muslims? And the answer is no, I do not. I actually strongly empathize with the Palestinians. And, you know, whether the Arabs that are being displaced and genocided by the Jewish elites and their proxy forces in the Middle East are Christian or Muslim, I have tremendous sympathy for the Arabs that are being ethnically cleansed from their homeland in a very similar yet more direct fashion that is being done to white people in our countries.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm looking at my globe, and if you look at the globe, even better than looking at a map of the world, because the Muslim populations do tend to be in the lower latitudes. You've got this massive expanse from Morocco on the Atlantic all the way across northern Africa, all the way across southern Asia, with a few exceptions, over to Mindanao on the Pacific. You've got this massive swath, and a lot of Africa, massive swath of Muslim area. They've got huge places where they can live, and of course, the areas closest to Israel have been, which is just a small part of the Muslim world, but
they destabilized heavily, yielding that one stone is then being used to take out two birds, of course. Number one, generate replacement populations to go in and destabilize white countries with, that can be then propagandized against the indigenous whites. And number two, it destabilizes the countries that could offer resistance to the expansion of Israel's borders.
Absolutely. And so I have no antipathy. I have no hostility towards Muslims, and I have sympathy in particular with the Palestinians. But
there are other groups too. There are the Assyrians and the Armenians, and they aren't all Arabs.
They're not all Arabs, and they're not all Muslims. A lot of people who are being adversely impacted in Iraq and Syria and other places. But the massive Muslim immigration into Europe and Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, which it's not that far along in the United States, but there's plenty of potential for it. This is very destabilizing, and it's got to stop. And that doesn't mean it's hatred towards Muslims, but you know, it's no good. And what I say sometimes, it's like our Jewish overlords are putting Christians and Muslims into a jar and shaking it up.
Yep.
and watching them fight.
Are you familiar with what the Israelis did to the Lebanese Christians and Muslims in the 1970s and 80s?
Oh, yeah. And you had very much a lot of divide and conquer, and you have the massacres
They would have IDF soldiers pretending to be Christian militia go and massacre a bunch of Muslims, and then they'd have IDF soldiers pretending to be Christian militia, the other end, and massacre the other side until they were fighting each other in a full-blown civil war, at which point Israel invaded and occupied a bunch of land.
Hey, you know, Ehud Barak, who was the prime minister of Israel for a little bit in the late 1990s and around 2000, and then for a while was Bibi's defense minister. He's Israel's most decorated soldier ever, right? Ehud Barak. And one of the things he's most celebrated for, was dressing up in drag and going with other IDF soldier or Mossad, you know, IDF soldiers, and he was pretending to be the girlfriend, and, you know, the other soldiers are pretending to be the boyfriend, and then going into a apartment building where you had some Hezbollah leaders living and shooting up everybody in the apartment building, including like an old Italian lady. And yep. He's the most decorated soldier ever. The cross-dressing Ehud Barak.
They also have a monument to a mosque shooter in Jerusalem, I believe. The guy in the 1980s that went in and just started
1990s at the at the temple of what was it? The temple of the caves or the caves the cave of the patriarchs. Yeah, Goldstein. What was
it? Goldstein.
Yeah, Baruch Goldstein. And do you know, here's some fun trivia. You know who was his classmate when he went to medical school at Yeshiva University in New York?
I'm guessing, Benjamin No, hold on. Yeshiva in New York.
He ran for president.
Bernie Sanders?
No. Bernie Sanders is too old. Howard Dean. Howard Dean was his classmate in medical school at Yeshiva University in New York, at the Albert Einstein Medical School.
Oh. Yeah. Well, Dr. Slattery, we're going to do the next question here. That's a nice factoid, though. I like that. That's good trivia. So Tang at 40Z asks, do you have ideas for nonviolent stunts we can use to disrupt the media elites? And this is something that I've said before, and I'll say it again. If you see a news crew, and I've done this before, and it works, I shut down a news crew outside of APAC for like 6 hours whenever they tried to set up their cameras and start singing the praises of Israel and the Shabbos Goyim that serve Israel and our government, I was walking behind the news crew, behind the journalists, holding up a sign where I knew the camera couldn't avoid it that said, the Goyim no, hashtag USS Liberty. And they kept on stopping and then setting up again, pointing the camera another way, pretending that I wasn't an influence. And the moment they were about to start recording again, I'd run behind them with the sign again. And, you know, you can shut down a news crew. It's not illegal to stand behind people with a sign. And unless they want to bring a backdrop with them everywhere they go, which the backdrop is supposed to be the scenery, that's why they're shooting live on location, you can shut down a news crew. And I shut down a news crew, and they eventually packed up shop and left. Either that or they pulled a fast one on me and snuck somewhere else. But this was before all of the Jews started pouring, and all of the Shabbos Goyim and Jews started pouring out of the APAC conference last year around this time. And this is how I entertained myself while I was waiting for them all to start streaming out at the end of the conference for the day. I think that was on Wednesday. So yes, get behind news crews anytime you think you know there's an area where they're going to report live on the scene. Like, if something like Kate Steinle happens, you know there are going to be news crews showing up near Pier 23 in San Francisco. So wait for them to show up and have a folded up sign that you then, you know, especially if they're live, which is a rare thing, but get behind them with that sign. Something USS Liberty, Levon Affair, Project for a New American Century.
Just a big Happy Merchant picture? How would that be?
Well, that would shut it down, too. And I think, you know, we outnumber the media vastly, and there are enough of us where we could have rapid response teams where the moment the media start filming on location, hopefully someone's within a few blocks, and we send them, you know, we could all have signs or folded up posters in our trunks that are just like, you know, just like having a spare tire in your trunk. Is the media trying to report or record a report somewhere with a significant area as the backdrop? And there you go. That's the best way I can think of to disrupt the media. Now, they're shutting down the comment sections on places like CNN and Huffington Post and heavily moderating them if they haven't shut them down. So if you're going to shitpost, do it IRL behind the news crew. It works. I've done it. And I probably cost whatever Jew-controlled network that reporter team was from in front of APAC, probably cost them the equivalent of $1,000 or $2,000 or $3,000 between their time on the satellite that they had reserved, which is very expensive per minute, by the way. And they charge per the minute by per the hour. It's very expensive. Also, they were paying, you know, a camera guy and a sound guy and the reporter. And so they were paying them. I wasted their time. I wasted their airtime on the satellite. And who knows, for about 2 or 3 hours of my time, I might have cost that Jewish mainstream media studio a few thousand dollars. That time well spent.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the Goyim No is good. I like the Goyim No, but the thing is, it's a bit esoteric, and a lot of people out there in TV land wouldn't know what it is. It's CNN Jewish propaganda, something like that. If you can fit the word Jew in, in such a way. I don't know. I mean, it's tough off the top of the head, but yeah, Jewish News Network. I don't know. We do want to name the Jew. That's the thing. And it's, and again, just like with the Muslims, as far as I'm concerned, it's not hostility. I have no hostility towards Jewish individuals, even Jewish individuals who I think are kind of, you know, partly responsible. But it's this group behavior, and you know, if we're risking offending some perfectly nice Jews, but otherwise. I mean, if we don't offend a few perfectly nice Jews, how are we going to save our society?
Exactly. And these were all questions that elites have had to tackle in the past. And most of the time it wound up in expulsion, which is why I just come out and say that, which is my starting point. If people want to have a conversation, I might change that platform promise. But, you know, at the very least, I want people to ask, well, why would you say this? Why would you advocate for that? And so I think we have to take a hard line. They're literally calling for our genocide, at least the elite ones, and certainly all the ones cooperating in the media, the blue Cheka marks, as I call them, the Cheka marks, not check marks on Twitter. I think that we can come out and have a very hard side of the bargain that we're trying to drive. And so moving on to the next question here. David G. asks, how do Jews wield Islam against whites if Muslims are aware of Jewish supremacy? And I covered this in a video earlier today. So the Palestinians are aware that they're being displaced by Jews. The Palestinians are aware that the Jews are committing genocide against them. The Palestinians are also, however, aware, and all of the Arab countries are aware, that the American public is paying the taxes that gets this done. The way to stop the Jews from wielding Islam or black-pilled Muslims against whites is to let those Muslims know, let the Muslim countries, especially if they're still in their country, let them know that Jews run our media and we're trying to do something about that. And that so long as they have a stranglehold on the media, it's almost impossible to combat their lies. Mm. What do you think of that?
Well, so I think Muslims in general tend to think that Jews have inordinate amount of power that and it's wielded in a way that is detrimental to most of the rest of the world. I think Muslims know this, even if they don't really understand how it's done. I think there's a lot of hostility towards Jews among Muslims. Be that as it may, if Muslims have a chance to enter Europe or Australia or North America and take advantage of, you know, the riches of our society, the wealth of our society, and also become, you know, help spread the faith, because that's what they're supposed to do. They're going to do it. And if it's Jews that enable them to do that, then Jews are, and if, I mean, they're not going to refrain from entering North America, Australia, and Europe just because.
Well, why would they? Their countries have been bombed right to the ground by.
Well, some of them have, but you know, even the ones that haven't, they're still going
to
come.
People respond to economic incentive. If the Jews advertise, hey, come to Europe, come to the United States, we'll tax the white people and then give all the money to your replacements. You know, that's a pretty hard deal to pass up.
Yeah, so they're not going to refrain from coming to our countries just because it's the Jews who are enabling them. And they're also not going to give up their hostility towards Jews just because it was the Jews that enabled them.
But I think that the Jewish instinct is more to hurt white people than to, you know, mitigate problems caused by massive Muslim immigration.
Right.
And as much as I enjoy seeing the Jews pack up and leave France and, you know, at the same time, you know, so the Jews took a problem of theirs, which is angry neighbors that are pissed off that Jews are just committing genocide in the Middle East and sponsoring ISIS and committing massive atrocities in the Middle East. They turned to those Jews that were Arabs that were a danger to the continued tyranny of Israel in the Middle East, that would check the grow of Israel. They took what was a liability to Israel and turned it into an asset to international Jewry by making those people who then get migrant status and all sorts of white people's taxes, they make them into a destabilizing force in our country. So the Jews are turning lemons into lemonade. Yeah, which is, of course, poisonous to white countries.
Okay, well, we'll hear more of this interview with Patrick Little after we get back from the break.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. We have a special promotion going on at Republic Broadcasting. This is a fundraiser for Republic Broadcasting involving the Energy Planner. Mail me a postcard. My address is at my website at thelibertyman.com. We pick a postcard every other Thursday. When your postcard is drawn out, you get to buy an Energy Planner for $215 instead of $285, $70 discount. $200 goes to Republic Broadcasting. You also get a 10% discount on my mattress pads. So get those postcards in, put your name, your telephone number, your email address on there, and when your postcard is drawn, you get to get an energy cleaner for $215 instead of $285. Mattress pads, 10% off. Help us out at Republic Broadcasting and help yourself to get an energy cleaner at a deep discount. It's a win-win situation for everybody. We hope you can get these postcards in soon. Thank you very much.
Welcome back from the break. Let's listen to more of that interview with Patrick Little.
They make them into a destabilizing force in our country, so the Jews are turning lemons into lemonade, which is, of course, poisonous to white countries in the form of an incited replacement population. And it's not all Muslims, by the way. They do it. Anyone they can pay to come into white countries and agitate against us, they do. It's not just Muslims. You have to remember that even if Muslims are being paid or incentivized to serve a purpose and propagandized to serve that purpose, which is to be the proletariat against whites and our former elites in these countries, you have to remember people respond to economic incentive, number one, and number two, propaganda works. So they're giving them the incentive to go to white countries, and then they're propagandizing them to hate whites.
It's that combination. So there's two things. There's the immigration, and you know it's from Muslim countries. It's from in the United States. It's mostly from south of the border, from Hispanic countries, but it's from Asia. It's from all over, and so there's that issue. But then it's compounded by the new immigrants are then incentivized to agitate against the interests of the traditional population, and it's that combination makes it particularly toxic.
And did you want to talk about maybe some examples other than Muslims of how the Jewish elite is achieving this, using, you know, perhaps expand on the analogous thing happening with where people from south of our border are being incentivized and then propagandized against us? I have to step away for a minute, but I can hear you. You want to cover that for a second?
Yeah. So, you know, the in certain ways, the Hispanics from below the border, you know, they have they're Christians, just like the majority population of the United States, and they're Spanish speakers, and Spanish and English are pretty closely related languages. They could come in and assimilate a lot easier than Muslims could. Not that that's what we want. I mean, they've got plenty of space and countries down there. There doesn't need to be massive immigration. But they could, but the incentive structures are not to. The incentive structures are to come in and, you know, regardless of their skin color, to think of themselves as non-white. If you look at the data from the 1960 census, there were, I think there might have been a couple of million Mexicans. I was just looking at it a couple of days ago. They didn't have a Hispanic category, but they did have a Mexican category. And the Mexicans were, maybe it was people who were born in Mexico, were 90%. I think about 90% of them thought of themselves as white. They listed themselves as being white. Of course, the people who are coming more recently are less white and more, you know, Indian American or Indian, you know, mestizo and whatnot.
Mayan,
yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing is, even the whites are incentivized to relate to being Hispanic, and so you have people like Jim Acosta at CNN, or people who run these advocacy organizations, these Hispanic advocacy organizations, and they, I mean, they're incentivized because by thinking of themselves as and identifying as Hispanic, they get preferential access to education, to scholarships, they get preferential access to jobs, and of course, you know, part of the deal is when you identify as Hispanic, then you've got to, you know, hold the door open for other Hispanics, other minorities, and help squeeze whites out. And, you know, when I say part of the deal, it might not be explicit, but that's the way it works. Are you back?
I think the key point here in what you're saying is that it doesn't matter who they can get to come here and identify as separate from us, which they're automatically going to do. People go into ghettos when they move to a country. That's what they do. They always have. The key purpose is that they can be used to destabilize this country and, I believe, create a revolutionary environment.
And what kind of revolution?
So, if you look at the cookie-cutter pattern, it's that they have to have the elite squared off against the majority of the people. And that's what they did with the proletariat in Russia, that's what they did with the commoners in Britain, that's what they did with the peasants in France. And in white countries, because we tend to be so social, and with the exception of feudalism, which the Jews played a huge role in the abuses of the peasants under European feudalism in Europe, they have not been able to successfully overthrow the elites here completely. You still have Dr. Kevin McDonald's popping up, you still have people like me that wake up and challenge them, people like Dr. Duke that have been fighting them for 50 years.
You still have it now,
but come from the other side of the aisle that wake up. And what they need is a revolutionary force that can be used as a weapon against anyone that speaks out against their power.
I don't know if I'd even call it a revolutionary force. It's more of a mopping up force. I mean, right now they are in control of our society. We are living under a Jewish tyranny already. So I mean, mopping, I think it's more of mopping up operations. And, you know, they do have these Antifa who are committing acts of violence against our people. I think it's a little revolution. That's the revolution. It's what you're doing. You're the revolutionary.
Okay, well, we'll hear more of this interview with Patrick Little after we get back from the break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Don't regret growing old. It's a privilege denied to many. Heart disease is taking our youth from us. Young people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond are dying needlessly. One of the hardest messages I've ever had to deliver is to convince people that something natural like Extendivite should be taken as a preventative measure. I'm sure you heard, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Extendivite is that ounce. Take Extendivite for 1 year and see what your doctor has to say and how much better you feel. Herbs take time to address the problem. It took years of life to have a problem. Give Extendivite 1 year to fix the problem. Don't wait until it's too late. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or visit us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Break. Let's listen to more of that interview with Patrick Little. I think it's a little revolution. That's the revolution. It's what you're doing. You're the revolutionary.
Well, I'm one of many. There are others, and I'm asking more people to join in and make this a big revolution. And you know, if anyone's my better, please step up. If you want to take my place in running, if you're willing to talk about these key issues, I'll endorse you and drop out myself. But Bruno Doberman asks, do you think they will mass kill the Palestinian people soon? I think they already have been doing that. I mean, we can talk about 1948 was a massacre of the Palestinians. Mm-hmm. How many thousands of Palestinians were killed? How many of them were forced from their homes, forced into camps? I mean, you care to comment on that? I think we're already witnessing the mass killing of Palestinians.
It's a good question because on the one hand, if you look at all the deaths, it's an ongoing massacre. It's an ongoing massacre. On the other hand, the Palestinian birth rate has remained very, very high. And so the Palestinian population's not falling, even though they're being genocided. It's this kind of odd thing where they're being genocided, but not fast enough to actually fully exterminate the population. They keep having babies, which is not the case with Europeans, because we're not
having
babies.
Which is why, of course, they're stopping with the brute force of the sword, and they're moving now towards incentivizing them to move to white countries. and where they can then see us as the enemy instead of Israel. And at the same time, I'm going to be at AIPAC in a few days protesting, and all of the pro-Palestinian rallies I've seen have been co-opted by Jews the last 2 years. Every time I go to one of these pro-Palestinian things, it's all, Israel is an evil European colonial state.
Okay, I have a couple questions. So the which AIPAC conference is this that you're going to?
The one in D.C.
Annual conference? Is this the big annual one?
The big annual one, yeah.
Okay, so you're going to the big annual one. And then which Palestinian groups or pro-Palestinian groups are you referring to?
I can't remember which names, but at UC Berkeley, I've been to two or three of these where, they said the problem with Israel is it's a white supremacist state.
Problem
with Israel is they don't have enough trannies. And the problem with Israel is that it's a white supremacist colonial state, and it's anything but Zionism. They try and blame white people for Israel. It's insane. And these when I was at Nakba Day in front of the San Francisco consulate of Israel, same exact talking points. And there are Jews saying, "I am a Jew that is against white supremacy, and therefore I oppose Israel." And it's just complete.
Yeah. Well, it's Chomsky. I mean, this is really this comes from Noam Chomsky. Your observation about the Palestinian groups is right. I saw it, and I haven't been involved with that stuff for a dozen years probably, but it was, when I was teaching universities, these student solidarity committees for Palestine, they were completely co-opted or largely co-opted in the process. Did you see the Muslim girl who was confronting Chelsea Clinton when Chelsea Clinton a couple days ago was going to, was it New York University, going to some, some memorial service for the dead people in New Zealand. Did you see that confrontation?
No, I did not.
It's exactly the type of thing you're talking about. So you had this Muslim girl, and she's confronting Hillary Clinton because Hillary Clinton had, a few weeks ago tweeted out nasty things about Ilhan Omar. Ilhan Omar said that AIPAC was a real thing. And then Chelsea Clinton tweeted out something like Ilhan Omar is anti-Semite. And so somehow,
Chelsea married a Jew, by the way.
Yes, she's married to a Jew, and she's got a Jewish baby, and she's got another one on the way. She's very pregnant right now.
Oh, she actually converted.
Well, I don't know. Actually, I don't know if she did. We know Princess Ivanka, Princess Shiksa, converted. I don't know. I don't know if she converted. My guess is she probably did. So take that with a grain of salt. But at any rate, Chelsea Clinton was, the thing is, Chelsea Clinton is a lot of things, and she isn't responsible for what happened in New Zealand. That was very odd. But the very same day as what happened in New Zealand is Bibi Netanyahu shooting over 100 missiles, really advanced missiles into Gaza, killing who knows how many people. Nobody bothers to count. So there you have this massacre in Gaza, and the Clintons and the establishment, but the Clintons are a big hunk of the establishment, are very responsible for that. They're very responsible for that. A lot of those weapons went over, whether it was in Bill Clinton's administration or under Hillary's Secretary of State stewardship. They're very responsible for that. But this Muslim girl at the university, she's not standing up for her own people who got killed directly by these, American-provided weapons, but somehow is going on some weird roundabout trail that involves white nationalism and accusing Chelsea Clinton of that.
Yeah, it's insane. I actually, when I was running for Senate, I sat down and met with some of the heads of the Muslim community in the Bay Area here, and the older ones were super concerned about the genocide in Palestine. They were very concerned about Syria being destabilized. They were very concerned about what was happening in the in their home countries. And I said, this is terrible what's happening, and I think it should be stopped. These are crimes against humanity. And they agreed. And, And the problem is a lot of the younger ones that are going to school and stuff are being told that it's all white people's fault, that this is European colonialism. And, you know, I had to confront several people that were saying, well, why do you white people let them rule over you and all that? And I had to, like, make it clear, and this is critical. This addresses the first or second question we got on this stream, is that they don't know that we don't know. They don't know that white people, for the most part...
You're saying the Muslims don't know. You see, the Muslims know at least a lot about power, you know, Jewish power in their own...
They assume that we know that they assume that we know that we're serving the
and,
Jews.
You know, we don't know because they look too much like us. We can't tell them apart. And of course, the more and more non-white people that come into the United States, the more and more Jews are going to look white. It's
yeah.
You know something? This was something I really didn't think of fully until I think maybe just today that it really didn't occur to me. But here's something else. You know, the whole circumcision business, right? And I never thought too much about it, but Dr. Duke red-bulled me on this. The reason for the big increase in circumcision, which happened in the wake of World War II in this country,
because people,
it was so that they could blend in.
Yep.
They could. How do you call it? What was that?
Dr. Kevin McDonald calls it crypsis.
Crypsis. Okay, crypsis. So like crypto Jew, cryptology, right? Crypto, yeah. So that they can fade in.
Crypsis, according to Dr. Kevin McDonald, is one of the chief strategies of Jews in taking power and hiding the fact that
so
they're
actually basically they've chopped off hundreds by now probably what a couple hundred million goyim foreskins, or I guess half the population's man, maybe 100 million goyim foreskins, or probably a lot more since
they got mine.
Yeah. I have to maintain my dignity and not talk about these things, but still, they've chopped.
I'm angry about it.
I'm pretty angry too when you get down to it. We want
the goddamn foreskin back.
I know.
A bunch of my dick. I want it back. I was a day old or I was an hour old. I had no say in the matter.
Well,
the doctor told my parents he's going to get a dick infection if we don't chop this thing off.
I was looking at the comment section of one of my recent videos, and somebody had said something about, you know, because I was talking about Trump, and he was saying Yang 2020, $1,000 a month, and he'll ban circumcision. And I wrote back, I said, well, if he can give us back our foreskins, then you got a deal.
Yeah, give me back my foreskin. So Spellcheck asked, Little Revolution, why don't you go to your local mosques and talk about the JQ? I think Muslims could be a strong ally to remove Bagel. And this is what I did. I went, I approached Muslim community leaders. Some of them reached out to me after the big video that got millions of views where I was being kicked out of the CAGOP for saying that I wouldn't serve Israel. They reached out to me, and I talked to them, and they know what page I'm on. And the problem is that I arrived at the statement of the problem with them in terms of outreach to the Muslim community is that there are two parts to this. Number one, most of the Muslims assume that whites know that Jews call the shots in this country. Number two, the younger Muslims, especially the ones that grew up here, are being indoctrinated to blame white people in general for what the Jews are doing. And this is the same as slavery, where the slave trade going back to Roman times has been Jewish. This is the same as and white people getting blamed for the slave trade in general. And Jews aren't white, by the way. This is the same as the child sex trafficking rings being, quote-unquote, the Russian mafia, which is all Jews at
yeah.
the top level.
So I'm going to say one thing that I've never said before, but, you know, there's a whole thing, Jews aren't white, or Jews are Jews white, or Jews not white. This is what I would say. Jews are not non-Jewish whites.
Okay. Very well put. That's right. Also very, that's concise, and it's also pretty darn, that's well put. That's all I have to say.
Hey, I'm really enjoying this, but I think we've been going on for about an hour, and I think I have other things I'm going to need to do soon, but I'd certainly be happy to do it again. Do we have any more questions before I have to log off?
Okay, let's make this one the last one. And we recorded your show prior to this too, so we have been chatting for quite some time, but it's always a pleasure. Thanks for stopping by, and I'm glad I stopped by your channel as well. By the way, on the way out, on the outro, I want you to plug where they can find you again. But the last question is, what can ordinary people do? This is from John Doe. What can ordinary people do to aid the removal of Jews from power in the USA? And I guess I will, I'll answer it, and then you can give your answer in your outro if you got the time.
Okay. Answer it.
Okay, so my answer is, expose the fact that Jews control the media if you are talking to someone that's concerned about fake news. So if you're dealing with a Breitbart fan and they hate the fake news, well, you explain to them and prove to them that it's Jewish. So think about yourself as a doctor, and you have to figure out which symptoms your patient is displaying. So if the goy or the non-Jew is showing symptoms that he's fed up with the fake media, then feed him red pills that are appropriate, the cure for that, which is showing Jews control the media, that's why it's all lies. If you're dealing with someone that's upset about foreign policy, a peace activist that's upset about the occupation of Palestine by Israel, that's upset that we got dragged into the Iraq war, that got upset that we're now trying to go to war with Iran and Syria, point out the fact that, you know, this has all been planned. Project for New American Century, point them towards Ryan Dawson, who will talk about Jewish control of the State Department. If you're talking to a Christian that's upset that they have to bake the gays a cake, tell them, well, all of this pro-gay stuff was pushed in 1920s Germany by Jews, all this tranny stuff was pushed in 1920s by the Jews, and the Germans got sick of it, and that's one of the reasons why they cut down on Jewish influence on culture. Talk about how Hollywood's controlled by Jews and how they've slowly been introducing pornography and normalization of homosexuality and pedophilia. So that's for Christians. You can also point them towards Martin Luther, the Jews and their lies, or any of the popes, if they're Catholic, that have complained about Jewish subversion. So the answer to the question, John Doe, what people can do to aid in the removal of Jews from power in the USA, depends completely on what person you're dealing with. There is no universal cure-all. You have to figure out what they care about, where their passions lie, and then figure out how Jews are subverting that, and then tell them. And Jews are subverting just about all good aspects of a healthy society, so regardless of what their passion is, you'll find a way Jews are screwing it up, and then point that out to them. Yeah. What do you think, Dr. Flattery?
Yeah, no, that's all good. A month ago or so on my channel, I had the Goyim's Choice Awards, and you might want to go back or Google the Goyim's Choice Awards. It was fun. We a friend of mine and I, we had a bit of fun, and we did a very Hollywood kind of awards show. And one of the categories was, you know, how do we solve the Jewish problem? And the contestants were, or the nominees were, exterminate the Jews, expel the Jews, and expose the Jews. And the winner was expose the Jews, name the Jews. And this is what you're doing. This is why what you do is so important. Goyim knowing who's a Jew. Judar is kryptonite. That's absolutely kryptonite. And I think if people simply know who's Jewish.
Can I interrupt for just one second,
yeah.
Dr. Slattery?
Yeah.
Okay. I want you to know one thing. So, kryptonite, right? Who wrote Superman?
A Jew.
Who writes all these superhero movies?
I'm pretty sure it was a Jew. I know, like Captain America was Jewish and all this stuff was Jewish.
So
yeah.
Superman is a racial alien from another world. He's just a visitor. He's a guest. And, you know, he has to hide his true identity. All right? And what is his only weakness? Kryptonite. So, what is kryptonite with? Crypto.
Oh my God! I never realized that. I never realized that. That is amazing.
It's probably coincidental, but I think it's funny as hell. I just realized that now when you're talking about that. Right now, I'm linking your article on the Goyim's Choice Awards from Dr. Duke's site in the chat. And if you want to pick up where you left off, if you can remember what you were talking about,
yeah,
Brian,
no.
It was a joke.
So if people know, like, so for instance, when I'm watching Tucker and I see that guy and he names George Soros and Rob Reiner and the whatever that Starrett guy is, Stayer, whatever his name was, but I know he's Jewish because I've looked him up. I see it, and it's like, yeah, there you go. They're all Jews. It's Jewish money. But most people don't. They don't. And so they can't connect the dots. So
So their main source of power is there being crypto. Their crypsis, yes. Dr. Kevin McDonald calls it, as their evolutionary strategy. And kryptonite is the way to break their crypsis.
And
the
this is
kryptonite is being named.
This is why they can't take over in China and Japan and Korea the way they've taken over in every white country, because it's the bat. They can come in and disappear in a puff of white smoke. In our countries, they can pretend to be white. They can't do that in other countries, and this is why they haven't taken over the Oriental countries the way they've taken over our countries. So what do you do? This is what I say to do, is, and I don't know if the young people are even watching TV anymore. Maybe this is a boomer thing, but whenever I'm watching the news or reading anything, I have my phone, and whenever I see a name, I want to know what that person's ethnic background is. And I do this all day long. And I look up people, and you know, it used to be hard. It used to be hard because you didn't used to have a phone to look them up on, and there you didn't used to be the databases and everything.
Okay, well, we'll hear more of this interview with Patrick Little after we get back from the break.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
How healthy are your arteries? Deteriorating circulation has a number of early warning signs. High cholesterol, high blood pressure, fingers and or toes often go cold, arms and or legs often go to sleep, sharp diagonal crease in the earlobe, short walks cause cramping or pains in legs, memory is not as good as it used to be, ankles swell late in the day, chest pain after physical exercise or emotional stress. If you experience even one of these symptoms, your circulatory system is crying out for attention. Extendivite is a natural solution to help improve your overall health. Extendivite is not your average heart tonic. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Welcome back from the break. Let's listen to more of that interview with Patrick Little.
I want to know what that person's ethnic background is. And I do this all day long. And I look up people. And, you know, it used to be hard. It used to be hard because you didn't used to have a phone to look them up on, and there you didn't used to be these the databases and everything. Now Wikipedia's gotten actually very, very, it's not 100%, it's not foolproof, but it's pretty good. And you can, you know, you see some journalist on TV and he or she is making these points, look them up. And just get into the habit of doing that, and it'll really help you, therefore, carry out the recommendations that Patrick just made of how to approach, you know, somebody about the, you know, the gay wedding cakes or whatever else it is that you're doing.
Whatever they love in life, figure, you know, pretty much anything worth loving in life, the Jews are working on destroying. So whatever they care about, show them how the Jews are working against it. Now, if it's something like whale watching or something or another, that's a hard sell. But other than that, you know,
but there might be an angle. But here is your catch-all angle. It's if we weren't having to devote so much time to these crazy Jewish projects like the wars and the ethnic replacement and everything, we would be able to concentrate on saving the whales. But we can't.
Well, that's the other thing. Like, if you're concerned about the environment and the main driver for poor environment is overpopulation, well, whites reproduce at pretty low birth rates, and if the Jews keep on flooding our countries with replacement migrants, and it doesn't matter where they're coming from, it doesn't matter what the replacement migrant is, the thing is, there's one thing in common: everywhere there are white people, the Jews are flooding in
everywhere,
replacement population. And we're depending on where you go, it's a different type of replacement population. In Australia, a different replacement population is being brought in, the whites are forced to pay for them, and then they're propagandized against the whites. It's a different mix in Europe of people, of the replacement population, where those three things are being done to them. The different mix here in Americas, the key thing is that everywhere Jews are forcing white countries or white areas to accept replacement population, forcing the whites to pay for it, and using the money from the whites to propagandize those replacements against the whites. The end goal, and I am firmly convinced of this because this is how Jewish revolutions always end, is that the useful idiots and the Jews will commit then mass atrocities against those people in the host society that had been blocking the Jews from absolute tyranny. Mm-hmm. And we're on the verge of that here, and that's why I'm running. I want to stop the Jews from committing atrocities in the United States, just as I want to stop them from committing atrocities in the Middle East and everywhere else around the world.
Well, thank you very much for having me on your podcast or your live cast, and thank you for being on my podcast.
Well, you're very welcome. It's always a pleasure, Dr. Slattery, and feel free to ring me up anytime. If I'm not busy, I'll answer.
Okay, and people, if you want to, like I say, if you want to check me out, you can check out nationalbugle.com or go to the Patrick Slattery YouTube channel.
Okay, well, thanks for being on, Dr. Slattery.
Okay.
National Bugle Radio, Dr. Patrick Slattery. He's also a co-host on the Dr. Duke Show, and he is often a co-host or the stand-in host on the Stormfront Radio Show.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Talk Have a good night, soon. Doctor.
All right, bye-bye.
Are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are
are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT.